So yeah.
So the brother asked a question about apostasy.
Yeah. Apostasy is not the punishment for apostasy.
Yeah. So the punishment for apostasy in Islam. So I think a lot of the time we ask this question: what is the punishment for apostasy in Islam? And a more interesting question for me recently has been: to what extent can liberalism, or does liberalism, or do liberal philosophers talk about this? Because that's for me a really interesting discussion, isn't it? The argument goes as follows, right? You say that, look, everyone should have freedom of belief. It's an individual human right. And therefore, if someone changes their religion, they should be free to do so based on human rights and based on the fact that they should have freedom of consciousness and thought. That argument is not a bad one because it actually coincides with the Islamic understanding of free will. And actually, it coincides with the verse in the Quran which says, لا إكراه في الدين قد تبين الرشد من الغي, in chapter 2, verse 256 of the Quran, which there's no compulsion in religion, that truth has been made clear from falsehood. So the idea that there should be freedom of consciousness and freedom of belief is actually a principal part of the Islamic discourse, because we believe that there are two things, that there's khiyar, which is free will, and there's determinism of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that He writes things, etc. So we believe everyone does have a right to believe in whatever they want to believe. And the idea is not one of, and this should be very much stressed in Islamic discourse, it's not one of individual belief. This is to do with social contract, okay? Now this is a big term in political science. What do we mean by the term social contract? Now in liberal philosophy there are two things, right? There's the primacy of individual and their right to do whatever they want without intervention from the government. And on the other hand, you have the universality of law. You're stuck between two things as a liberal. You have the primacy of being an individual. You're an individual, right? You have the freedom to do whatever you want. And for a liberal, especially a libertarian, they'll say the government should keep away from putting obstacles in the way of the individual so that he can be as free as possible, right? But then obviously they realize, almost all liberal theorists realize the need for, number one, representation, and number two, law, which is why they have social contract. Now what is social contract? Social contract is, number one, it's forced upon us. So by virtue of the fact that I'm a British citizen, you're a British citizen as well, you're a British citizen?
Something like that.
No, we're going to have to check on that
one. Okay,
By virtue of the fact that we're British citizens, we have to abide by British law. And that's not something we have any say on because of the citizenship that we carry. In other words, we're forced into a social contract. It's not a social contract which is voluntary or something I have any choice in, right? The terms of that social contract indicate that I have to follow the law of this country, isn't it? Okay. So almost all liberal theorists agreed with this. Now the question is, not one of personal belief. I can believe whatever I want to believe from a liberal perspective and from an Islamic perspective and not have any punishment in any context exerted on me in any way. Because belief is something which is personal. Belief is something which is between me and God. And it's only known through the publication of that belief or profession of that belief in public settings. Right? So in other words, people won't know what I believe unless I go and declare it. Question: to what extent are what are referred to as laws of apostasy, which is, for example, if I come out and say I'm no longer, say for instance, a Christian, I'm not going to use the Muslim example, say it's a Christian country and I come out and say I'm no longer a Christian, to what extent can social contract theory, the like of which was advocated by people like Rousseau and obviously John Locke, before him Thomas Hobbes, and almost all liberal theorists, even J.S. Mill, can it facilitate for a kind of punitive punishment for those who renounce their faith publicly? Now I'm going to make a very bold claim here. I'm putting Islam to the side right now. I'm putting Islam to the side. It's not about Islam. I'm going to say that from my reading of liberalism, that that can be facilitated. What am I talking about? I'm saying quite clearly that if someone comes in a liberal state, which also claims to be, for instance, Christian, which can happen, according to J.S. Mill, that number one, point one, that in that liberal state, it would be a, it could be seen as a rupturing of the social contract if someone professes publicly, yes, that they are not ex-faith anymore. That is if that faith is connected with the social contract. What is your evidence for this? I'll give you the evidence for this right now. John Locke wrote a book, obviously everyone knows it, called The Two Treatises of Government. I think he wrote this in 1687. But he also wrote a book called On Tolerance. In chapter 19 of this book, he talks about Jewish states. John Locke talks about Jewish states. And I'll, if it's not chapter 19, it's somewhere in the book. And he says, it's legitimate to allow Jewish people to implement Mosaic law. And we know full well that in Mosaic law there are laws of apostasy. And he continues by talking about the social exclusion of a certain amount of certain people of different faith groups. He talks about Mohammedans and atheists. Now, Muslims wouldn't say this, by the way. So in essence, you could argue that Islam applies a more rigorous type of liberalism than John Locke himself. Why? Because Islam says, in an Islamic state or Islamic governance, if you're a Muslim or a Christian or a Jew, you can live in your respective province without harm. Now, someone will say, but then they say that you have to pay the jizya. But according to the hadith, jizya is one dinar. So it's a tax. It's a tax that almost everyone has to pay for the protection of the people. One dinar is less than the zakat, which is usually typically 20 dinars of nisab. So therefore, the jizya is less. So this idea, this false notion of jizya being a discriminatory tax, it's only discriminatory against Muslims because Muslims have to pay more, by the way. If you want to call it discriminatory, Muslims actually have to pay more in zakat. Yeah? So, going back to what I was saying about apostasy, I came across Immanuel Kant's work, and I also came across John Stuart Mill's work. And there was a manuscript that was attributed to John Stuart Mill, which actually specifically talks about blasphemy law. And he talks about blasphemy law, and he says, John Stuart Mill says, John Stuart Mill actually says equivocally that if killing someone, this is John Stuart Mill, not the Prophet Muhammad, not Moses, not Jesus, it's not a medieval text, this is one of the prime figures of liberalism in the Victorian era in Britain, by which and through which most other subsequent theorists take their liberalism from. He actually says in that manuscript that kill them. Yes, he says kill them, kill them. If you have to kill many of them, kill them. In other words, it seems to me, and Immanuel Kant has some similar sayings, it seems to me that the question we should be asking is not whether Islam allows apostasy law, it's whether liberalism allows apostasy law. Because actually, when we look at the primary source materials of the most regarded liberal theorists, the highest, the founding fathers of liberalism, it would seem that a social contract theory could in fact facilitate of a kind of apostasy law, right? So that's from a liberal perspective. Islam is something quite similar in many ways, but has some fundamental differences. So, Hudhayf ibn Yaman, who's one of the Prophet's companions, he had a list of people who are munafiqun. And those list of people were people who had rejected Islam. They were not Muslims. The Quran says, إِنَّ الْمُنَافِقِينَ فِي الدَّرْكِ الْأَسْفَلِ مِنَ النَّارِ. That certainly the hypocrites are in the lowest pit of the hellfire. They are not Muslims. They are not believers. They are not mu'mins. Yes? Yet, there was no apostasy punishment applied to those individuals. There was no apostasy thing applied to them. Why? Because it regarded to personal belief. So I'll be unequivocal in saying this. That which regards to personal belief is different from that which is expressed publicly, and thereby, from a liberal perspective, before it even becomes an Islamic one, ruptures the social contract. Now, the question is it fair and is it okay, is it possible, is it conceivable in a liberal state, bearing in mind social contract theory, to have these laws? And therefore, can a liberal state slip into a kind of nationalistic state, intolerant state? The answer is, unfortunately, yes. That is the elasticity of liberalism. Liberalism, because of the tensions between the primacy of individual versus the universality of law, could sway in either one of the two directions. Could either become very much libertarian in the sense that, you know, we don't even allow... I mean, think of it this way, yeah? Libertarians would argue, why do we have seatbelt laws? Yeah? We have seatbelt laws. You know, when you have to go in your car, you have to put on a seatbelt, don't you? But why do you have to put on a seatbelt? Why is... A libertarian would argue, this is a paternalism. They'll say it's like the state is acting as your parent now. Put on the... But it's not to do... Even if I hurt myself, it's not your business if I hurt myself. Someone could argue, a libertarian would definitely argue, that even if I hurt myself in the car and I create a crash, it's not, I'm not harming anyone else by doing this. Why are you telling me what to do? So I'm allowed to drink alcohol? Think about this, because this is the ignorance of some people of their own philosophy, right? I'm allowed to drink alcohol, yeah, and in some places smoke weed, and have, you know, unlimited amount of sexual partners, polyandry, and that could cause problems for myself, sexual problems. All of that is permissible, but I have to put on a seatbelt. I mean, does that sound reasonable to you? Seriously, think about it. I'm allowed to compete in mixed martial arts, where I could injure someone and die. I can go to, I can play rugby, but I have to put on the seatbelt. What kind of nonsense is this? Think about it. It doesn't make any sense. Let's be honest about this, yeah? Why is the state telling us you have to put on the seatbelt? If I don't put on the seatbelt, will I harm anyone else? Think about it. Am I going to harm... I'll harm myself. Yes. But I'm not going to harm anyone else by not putting my seatbelt. Yeah, but if I hit the... No. My point is this. My point is that liberal philosophy can go in two different ways, yeah? You have on the left side, let's say for the sake of argument, an extreme libertarianism, where we don't want the state to get involved in any matter. Yeah? Like, for example, we shouldn't have seatbelt laws. That's one side. On the other side is where liberal philosophers will say, actually, there should be restriction, and that should be enforced through the context of social contract theory into the universality of law, which should be applicable on the individual. Law should be applied. And John Stuart Mill says something very interesting. You know what he says? He says, for instance, he goes, if a husband and wife, they have sex in public, is that harming anyone else? You could argue no. You could argue no. Not physically harming anyone. If for example, not to point anyone out, someone brings his wife and, you know, in the park in the middle here, sorry to say, has sex with her, takes his trousers off, yeah, and all of those things, sorry to say, Annie, is that going to harm anyone? No, they're having sex, you can decide to leave, you can go, you don't have to look at it, you don't need to be offended by it. Why is that censored, yes? You could argue this, yep. No, I understand, it's children and all that, but we can have an area where they can do it, no problem. We can have an adult park, why not? Right, pardon? Yeah, no, I'm just. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with this point. Yes. I'm not telling you we should. I agree with your point. Yes, yes, my friend, I agree with you. Yes, but I'm saying. So John Stuart Mill said, "Look, there's some things. This is what he said. There's some things which tease our sensibilities. We have a culture, and that's not acceptable in our culture. And he says, therefore, the universality of law and the social contract should put restriction." So here, John Stuart Mill is talking about, on Liberty, in his book, he's saying that there are certain things which should not be accessible for people, i.e. having sex with your wife in public spheres, or your husband, yes? So the question is, now here's the real question, what should be allowed to be done in publicly without fear of reprisal or otherwise a fear of a consequence from the law? This is a thing that liberals struggle with. That's why you have different schools of thought within liberalism, and that's why I'm talking about elasticity of liberalism. Yeah, it's not something which, okay, I'm a liberal now. Now, the question is, when they come to us, this is what I'm going to say to everyone, to answer your question, sorry, yeah? When they come to us and say, look, you need to modernize What do they say? They say, you need to modernize Muslims. You know, you need to modernize. What do you mean? Come on, tell me, white man. What do you mean by... Sorry, not
Westernized.
Well, yeah, yeah. What do you mean by modernize? I want to know what you mean. Yeah? Okay, you'll say, look, and by the way, when I say white man, I'm not talking about, you know... I'm talking about...
Western.
Yeah, yeah, the Western man. What do you mean? What do you mean by it? All right, I'll tell you what you mean. You mean become more liberal. Because that is the dominant ethic in the Western world, yes? Okay, now I'm liberal. I've embraced liberalism. Brother, Okay, what do we do? Let's go look at the liberal books. Let's look at the works of John Locke and John Stuart Mill and Rousseau. Pardon?
If I go to Saudi Arabia, yeah?
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
I'm not an ambassador for Saudi Arabia. Yes, I agree with you. Wallahi, I don't... I agree with this point. Yeah, I agree with that point. Yeah, yeah.
Muhammad,
I agree.
Finish your point.
Yeah, yeah, sorry, going back. I'm a liberal now, yeah? Okay. So yes, I've embraced liberalism. Let's go to the books of the liberals. So we find within the books of the liberals, you have a spectrum of understanding of the main question is, to what extent should the government intervene? And you don't have one answer for that. You have 10 answers from 10 different liberal thinkers. Yes? And so here's what I'm saying to you is that going back to apostasy law, yeah. Going back to apostasy law, I'll come to you, I'll speak after because I can't. Yes, I agree. I agree with you, brother. Yes. 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 We have to have rules. Yes, that's my argument. I agree with you. Yes, I agree with you. Yeah, the man made a good point there. You must have rules, otherwise people will be chaos, anarchy. He's right. But the question is this. Yeah, think about it. Have you ever thought about this before? They talk about human rights. So, to what extent can a liberal state institutionalize a law, universalize it, and apply a death penalty for those who don't go against it? Well, according to John Locke, according to John Stuart Mill, according to Immanuel Kant, according to John Rousseau, according to almost even Voltaire, I believe as well, according to almost every liberal, they have full right to do that because of the social contract. Therefore, don't tell me about liberalism. I mean, that's the issue here. They come with a false pretense. They don't even know their own philosophy. That's the issue. They don't even know their own philosophy. That's why America gets away with death penalties. They have a death penalty in America. It's not against liberalism to have a death penalty. It's not against it.
Can you ask me?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
How did the government come about?
That's a political question. If you're asking about Parliament, obviously you're going back to Charles II and his... But we don't want to go... With this country, there's a whole tradition, isn't it? If you want to go back to William II, William I, William the Conqueror, 1066, I don't know how far back you want to take this. We can talk after. It's a long... where do I go? Edgar of Etheling. Or should I go back to the Normans? I don't know. So here, ladies and gentlemen, don't be deceived, is my point. When you ask, this is the presupposition which we have to investigate. Because when they say human rights, what do they actually mean? They mean 1948 Convention of Human Rights that was put in place after World War II. That's what they mean, right? All right, so that convention, if you read it, it's got 30 articles. It's got 30 different points. 30 different points. In every one of those 30 different points, you have the right of this, the right of that, the right of this, the right of that. Now,
there's five basic human rights: right to live, right to shelter, right to water, right to food, and right to something.
Here's my criticism of the whole thing. I've got a criticism of the whole. I've got a criticism of the whole thing. I've got a criticism. Do you know when you tell someone you've got a right to do something? If I tell you, brother, you have the right to do this, you know? Do you know what it's telling you to do? To be entitled. That's what it's telling you to be, right? So it's a negative way of asserting something. I say, look, you have this right. It means you are entitled to this. The question is, why does the UN Declaration of Human Rights 1948 not have anything on responsibilities? Because by telling you have a right, it's telling you what you deserve. But it's not telling you what you need to do. And that's the problem with a lot of the rights culture that we have at the moment. You have the right to this, you have the right to that. You have a child has a right to education, but a teacher does not have a right to a responsibility to teach. How does that even work? You need to counterbalance rights with responsibilities. That is a communitarian criticism which has been made of liberal human rights culture. Look, I want to wrap up by saying, in the context of the West, we don't believe in, if someone changes their religion, yes, whatever. Hi. You're okay.
Hello there.
We don't care. If they're Muslim, we don't go there. Even in the context of an Islamic state, we don't care about personal beliefs. The extent to which we care about personal beliefs is the extent to which it's connected with concepts of rupturing a pre-existing social contract which is put in place with the permission, yes, of that individual. Because they have to do bay'ah, they have to pledge allegiance, they have to give legitimacy to that state. So, in sum, I would say the laws, the punitive laws of Islam, and this is my final statement. My final statement, every single punitive law in Islam, the death penalty, what they call the ridda punishment, every single one of them can be justified, not Islamically, through liberalism and through the social contract. Yes, we would be going away from libertarianism, but you can justify it through the universality of law. So it's not even a liberal critique of Islam if we're honest with ourselves, and therefore it has no moral or ethical basis. It's just a subjective value judgment of 21st century complexion. Should we pray?